Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. And if you want the latest commentary on all the current events, I invite you to check out our blog. And that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. So a great big hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. Today's topics: Syracuse assistant basketball coach is under investigation for molestation. The shooting at the White House. The Super Committee, if Congress couldn't get legislation passed, what make us think a makeup of the same people, just fewer of them, would get the job done? We're also going to talk about Occupy Wall Street. And also, why is Cornette really leaving Princeton? And much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And also, I have a chat room open. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or my bell, we are making it easy for you to join the conversation. But first, let's take a look at our current events. First up, two former Syracuse University ball boys say that they were molested by associated head basketball coach Bernie Fine, starting in the late 1970s and continuing into the 1990s. Police in Syracuse said that they have opened an investigation into the allegations. And in a statement Thursday night, Syracuse said it has placed Fine on administrative leave. Now, one alleged victim, Bobby Davis, now 39 years old, told ESPN's Outside the Lines that Fine molested him beginning in 1984. Shortly before Davis entered the seventh grade. Davis, the team's ball boy for 6 years beginning in 1984, said the abuse occurred at Fine's home, at the Syracuse basketball facilities, and on road trips, including the 1987 Final Four. The second alleged victim, Michael Lane, now 45, is Davis's stepbrother and was also a ball boy for several years. He told Outside the Lines that Fine molested him starting when Lane was in the fifth or sixth grade. Now, Davis said Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim saw him in Fine's hotel room on several of those road trips But David said he never told Boyne about the alleged abuse. Police stressed to Outside the Lines that they are in the early stages of the investigation. So the questions I have for you. Now, of course, I believe in innocence until proven guilty, and I think that's why GOP frontrunner Herman Cain was given the benefit of the doubt. However, what I find most disturbing is the fact that a large part of the society at large seems to be defending the coaches before all the facts are in. What is this all about? I keep going back to Michael Vick and the Dahl trial. They were ready to hang him. And yet, these coaches seem to be getting a lot of support. Well, I could be missing something. Are we seeing the beginning of the floodgates coming open? I think so. And I think the Penn State scandal has given a lot of people courage to come out and say something. Also this week, there was a lot going on in the news, but I saw very little bit about the shooting at the White House. And that was a good article by Charlie Savage and Mark Landon in the New York Times that wrote, law enforcement officials on Wednesday arrested a 20-year-old Idaho man suspected of firing a semi-automatic rifle at the White House on Friday night. And the Secret Service reported finding that at least one bullet had struck the presidential residence. Now, the suspect, Oscar Ortegos Hernandez, was arrested at the hotel near Indiana, Pennsylvania, about 12:35 p.m. by the Pennsylvania State Police, acting on information from Secret Service agents in Pittsburgh, the Secret Service said. Now, Ortegos Hernandez is currently in the custody of the police, but the man previously referred to in a warrant as Oscar Ortego has a background of legal problems and is said to have a history of bad behavior. Now, during an encounter early on Friday with the police in Virginia, he said that he was from Idaho Falls. The police there said his family had reported him missing last month. Gunfire was heard in the vicinity of the White House and the National Mall shortly after 9 on Friday night, and the Secret Service said his officers had seen a car speed away west on Constitution Avenue. Now, a few minutes later, the car was found about 7 blocks away, abandoned, and with an assault-style semi-automatic rifle inside. Now, how does an armed man take shots at the White House that has a bulletproof glass, barriers, a fence, sensors, Secret Service officers standing guard, walking patrol, riding bicycles, driving cars, and leading bomb-sniffing dogs, and some say anti-aircraft systems ready to take out planes that might try to launch 9/11-style suicide attacks? How could this people not be found? How could this man not be found? Was this a major breakdown in our Secret Service system? Is this the first time? No, might I add. Recall that someone threw an object at the president when he was saying a speech. Recall the Salehis. Crashed the wedding party, or crashed the Senate party. Sounds like to me that the Nation of Islam, or should I say the Fruit, should take the lead on this one. At any rate, I would love to get your comments on these. Also, did you see what happened on Friday at the University of California, Davis campus? Now, if you haven't heard, on Friday, a group of University of California, Davis students that were part of the Occupy Wall Street movement on campus became the latest victims of alleged police brutality to be captured on video. The video showed the students seated on the ground as a UC Davis police officer brandishes a red canister of pepper spray, showing it off from the crowd before dousing the seated students in a heavy, thick mist. This incident recalls the earlier infamous pepper spraying by a New York Police Department official of several women who were seated and pinned in. The UC Davis images are further proof that police continue to resort to brutal tactics when confronting Occupy activists. One woman was transported to the hospital to be treated for chemical issues. Is this the way we treat our citizens nowadays? I am definitely appalled by this behavior. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. And, of course, we're going to solicit the commentary and advice of your very own Ask Gina. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gima. And Ask Gima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, before the break, we were talking about several top stories, and we want to start the conversation off with Bernie Fine. Of course, as we mentioned earlier, the Syracuse University associate head basketball coach, and we want to solicit, of course, yours truly, Ask Gina. Gina, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
Okay, so as you heard during the opening, here is yet another incident, or allegedly, about some abuse. I'm going to use that term as opposed to molestation. What is going on here, especially with our coaches on the national scene?
Well, I think we live in a society that has lost some of its moral compass. I think we have a lot of people around that are dealing with their own issues and some untreated things. And so they have found a system or found an occupation, found an organization that will allow them to play out some of those things on some of our most vulnerable, which is our children. And so that's kind of where we are. And I think it was Bill Maher who said it best this week, that where there is an abundance of men and lack of women, he said men sometimes behave badly. And that if there, and so in these, and you look at these two organizations, both of them right now are falling into the male sports. I'm not saying it's absent in female sports, but these two major cases that we're talking about right now is coming out of two premier programs, Penn State and its football and Syracuse and its basketball. So, you know, it's kind of like, whoa, what's really going on? And then you want to know, how far does this go? And when, how soon does it start? If we were to, you know, start looking at some of our little league teams, is it starting there? So it's a, and the saddest part of all is that the children don't feel as though they can tell, or when they do tell, they're not believed, which happens more often than not even with outside, but even for the child that's abused, molested inside their home. When they tell, you know, a lot of times they're not believed, and so when it happens again, you know, they really believe the person when they say no one's going to believe you, because no one does. So it's just we've lost our way as a country in terms of our moral values, and so this is what happens. These things are beginning to surface a lot more. And I think, as you stated earlier, that Penn State is the tip of the iceberg. I don't think it's going to stop with Penn State or Syracuse. I don't think this is all from Penn State. I think we're going to hear a lot that is going to really shake who we are and shake that institution, shake how we value those players in sports and entertainment, especially in the world of sports and where we place our values and how they can go unchecked based on the amount of money that they're bringing in. And so it's going to get, I don't think this is going to end pretty for Penn State at all. Or, and Syracuse situation is, you know, it's older and allegedly they had said something about this before and the police didn't find any reason to continue to investigate. So I find it interesting that they are opening the case back up, so to speak, or looking at it from another angle. So,
you know, to add to that, it seems as if in both instances there were pending or prior cases to now it becoming publicly known, or should I say nationally known. And in both instances, there were accusations before. And it seems like the system has allowed these men to continue in this line of work with so much, so many accusations still kind of pending or lingering around. Is the money allowing this to happen, or is it something else?
Well, I don't know if the money is allowing it to happen, but it makes it easier for people not to report. It makes it easier for people to cover up. It makes it easier for people to stay in a vacuum, so to speak. So the money, it definitely helps to shelter, to provide a shelter to the institution, and I think, you know, that's what's going to be the downfall of the institutions is the money.
Interesting. So as I mentioned earlier, are we seeing the beginning of the floodgates all coming open? That is, do you think that more victims of child abuse or child molestation will begin to come forward?
Yes, I do. I think this will give some of them the protection, quote unquote, that they felt they never had before. And I think you're going to see some cases where they did report and maybe the reporting was never carried through or there was no follow through. So I think some of that's going to come out where you're going to see law enforcement agencies and child protective services being under scrutiny as well for their lack of follow-through. So I think a lot is going to happen that should help us as a nation redefine how we define child abuse. And because there's no national standard for that. It's a state-by-state thing, which is incredible to me, that we don't have a national definition of what is child abuse. And So I think this is going to hopefully help push us into that direction so that, you know, predators, because that's what they are, don't find their way to the states that have the least restrictive laws and find themselves in those at those places wreaking the most havoc on our most vulnerable.
You know, so that which leads me to my next question, and you kind of partially answered it. But when it's all said and done, what do you think has to change so we can minimize the probability that this won't happen again, or it lessens the chances of it happening to others in the future?
Well, we have to tell our children, and we have to begin to have the conversation with our children, boys and girls, around what's a good touch and what's a bad touch, so that they can themselves be able to determine whether or not this is supposed to be happening. And especially, you know, outside of the home, but even inside of the home. And then finding a place for them to go where they can tell their story and not be re-victimized. Oftentimes when a child reports or tells somebody, then they have to go through their story so many times before somebody finally listens to them and before somebody finally believes them. And so who really wants to relive that over and over and over again? So we've got to find a way to listen to that child in the beginning and provide them with something, and we haven't done that. And the first thing I said is that we have to begin to have a conversation with our children about what is good touch, bad touch, or some like to say a healthy touch. You know, when does it cross the line? And it should cross the line for each person depending on their level of comfort. But there has to be something that we say that right there crosses the line. Taking a shower with a child that's not yours crosses the line. I'm really not, you know, there's no way around that. You know, sliding up and down the floor in an open area, to me that crosses the line. It may not be illegal, but it's definitely some ethical issues there that I would question that if that person was my employee. If that coach was my employee, I would question his level of morality, because what makes you think that's okay? And so, but we have to begin to have the conversation with our children about what is a good touch and what is a bad touch, and here's what you do when somebody touches you, and here's who you go and tell, and then you tell this person. You tell more than one person. You come home and tell. You tell a teacher, you tell whoever, you tell a friend. Because what happens often not, and even if you look at the Herman Cain situation, well, she didn't tell anybody, but this, you know, then there's the one case where the lady told three or four people. So it wasn't like, you know, she didn't tell anybody. She told three or four people. So there's at least three or four people that can say she did come home that day upset. And so when we're dealing with our children, we have to believe them. And then let the investigative process do what it's supposed to do. If they're not being honest, if they're making it up for, you know, whatever reason, you know, we still have to allow the system to do what it's supposed to do. The problem is, in this wonderful country that we call the United States of America, we have cut those very services so deep that you can be a caseworker with, you know, more 40, 50, 60, 100 kids on your caseload. And how are you going to monitor that? How are you going to investigate all of those things? And so there's so much we need to do differently as a country as it relates to these types of issues, so much.
You know, I was just wondering here while you were talking about you mentioned the children and the proper steps that they should take. But what does it say about the mental health state of these men that are conducting themselves in this manner? Not even if it's in a joking, I don't see how you can shape this in a joking manner, but at the same time, what does it say about the state of the mental health of these people?
That they are in need of a diagnosis, which then would give them a level of treatment so that they could then begin to get the help that they need. I mean, you know, I don't think people wake up in the morning and decide, today I'm going to go molest somebody or abuse somebody or kill somebody. There's something else that leads up to that. So it's in the beginning of that leading up to that. And that's not to excuse whatever they do. But, you know, there's a starting point for everything. There's something that triggers that makes them want to go out and do whatever it was they're doing. And then they find themselves, I mean, he was very comfortable. We're talking about the guy at Penn State, was very, very comfortable in what he was doing. And then one has to wonder what made him so comfortable. Was it because he knew that the football program ran Penn State and that it ran that town and that he knew nobody would ever report him because, you know, there was too much riding on it financially for that whole place. So it made it easy, basically, for him to do what he did.
And typically you get this kind of behavior when there's no consequences. And if you do something and you get caught and nothing happens, you continue to get – it continues to be a lot easier to do it the next time and next time and the next time. So, you know, the level of comfort that he had to be directly related to the consequences of his prior activities.
I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that had a lot to do with the frequency of it. I mean, we're up to 9 victims now. I would say that by the time this is all said and done, you know, I'm sure it's going to be in the 20s or 30s by the time it's all said and done. And that's so sad and it's so unfortunate, but I do not believe it's going to stay in single digits. I think we're going to see a whole lot of men come forth and talk about what happened to them.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, if the accusers are found guilty, do you think the punishment will fit the crime?
Well, I don't know, because it varies from state to state in terms of what the punishment would be. So therein lies the other issue, because there's no standard definition to define what molestation or abuse is. There's also no standard penalty, so to speak. It, you know, that person, I mean, the judge could rule a number of ways, to no jail time, to life, to, you know, so much time with parole. I mean, it could be a myriad of things that could happen. And for the victim, of course, it's never going to be enough. But I think, you know, what most victims desire is the person to admit that they did it and then to, you know, on some scale to apologize for their behavior. And very seldom do you get that from somebody that's still in their pathology of being a predator. You know, they're not going to admit to a whole lot. So
yeah,
that takes a lot of time.
So, you know, this is pretty much indicative of an individual being abused themselves in a lot of cases. They kind of follow that pattern. So do you believe that the accusers in some way, shape, or form have been abused themselves in the past, and this is what perhaps brought this behavior on?
The accusers?
Yeah, well, not necessarily the accuser, but the actual the alleged person that conducted the crime, or allegedly
the perpetrator.
Yeah, exactly.
If they themselves have some unresolved issue around something.
Yeah, you know, typically you have people that are molesting or conducting this type of behavior has been abused themselves, and so my question to you is: do you think there it may be some of this going in the background? I mean, this seems to be a prevalent in a certain part of our society where these men are, doing this type of behavior to young boys. I mean, you look at the Catholic Church, it was a lot of different men doing the same thing. Now it looks like this is becoming to be a pattern in our sports systems. So my question to you is, do you think there's a pattern of abuse for the perpetrators as well as them causing to the victims?
Well, I mean, probably on a small scale. I mean, they may have, you know, had some on their own unresolved issues, so to speak, around, you know, something, and that might have led them to begin to embrace and act that whatever that it thing is out on other people. So that's a possibility that they themselves have some abuse in their background, whether it was the same kind of abuse. Is up, but you know, at the end of the day, it really comes down to, it comes down to power and control. So it kind of depends on where they fall into that spectrum. But it's highly possible that these particular perpetrators themselves, alleged perpetrators themselves, may have suffered something in their own past, and thus you know acted it out as they got older, because they themselves never you know got any help for their own issues.
You know, I asked you a few moments ago about the actual punishment fitting the crime. What would be the appropriate punishment for this particular case? In your opinion, what is the right thing for the judicial system to do in this particular, in these particular instances?
Well, it's a step by step process, and it's layers to the problem, because you're dealing with the alleged perpetrator and the victims and what needs to happen just in that part of what happened. Then you're dealing with, you know, the institution and what culpability it had in covering up the alleged, you know, molestation abuse. So that in itself is something that has to be dealt with as well. And so it's stages in which this these things have to be addressed. And so when you're talking about, for me personally, for the alleged perpetrator, and depending on the number of victims, there should be a set number of years that person should get in terms of incarceration. But they should also get, you know, some help, because obviously something wrong with them, that you are doing, you know, things with young boys that you really don't find anything to be wrong with. So, you know, therein right there tells you that something about them ain't right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, number one. And then, you know, I think that the institutions, if they had any, and the individuals, even if let's say, you know, I went to, you know, if I'm the assistant coach and I went to Joe Paterno, and Joe Paterno didn't do nothing, he should be held accountable for something. And if he went to somebody and they didn't do nothing, I think every layer of administration that did nothing should be held accountable.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. So we're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to change the conversation here a little bit about the shooting at the White House. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this, but there was a young man that actually tried to shoot at the White House, and in fact, he did it. So how did an armed man take shots at the White House that has bulletproof glass, barriers, a fence, sensors, Secret Service officers, standing guard, mind you, walking patrol on the roof, riding bicycles, driving cars, bomb-sniffing dogs, all around the White House, shoot at the White House and get away, and wasn't found until several days later? We're going to talk about that just on the other side of the break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, I want to bring Jima back on the line here. We want to talk about this shooting at the White House. Now, I'm going to open up the phone lines. So would love to hear your comments. And I also got a chat room going right now. And you can also tweet me at TaylorMade101. And you can also tweet Jima at AskJima. That's AskJema. Jima, I want to know, was this a major breakdown at the White House to allow this to happen?
That's an understatement for me. Yes, it was a major breakdown at the White House. And I'm really trying to figure out, honestly, what took them so long to catch the guy. And I'm trying to figure out, how is it he was able to stop in his vehicle and have his window down and point a gun across to the passenger side out of the car and take that many rounds of shots and not be immediately stopped or even killed on sight? Where was everybody? Was everybody on a break? You know, was it the fact that, you know, the president wasn't there? And so their guard, quote unquote, was down a little bit. That is completely unacceptable. I think everybody that was at work that night at that time should be fired. That's just my opinion. Because if it happens once, you guarantee it can happen again. And I am just livid that this has not gotten the kind of attention I think it should have gotten from the media. They've tried to minimize it. They've tried to act like it's no big deal because the president wasn't there. Well, this man obviously didn't know that, nor did he care, because he said he was told by his God that he was Jesus. What in the world? And so I'm livid. I'm upset. I'm scared. I'm angry. You know, that all of this is happening, and we're just, you know, sitting back like, oh, la-ta-da, la-ta-da. It's unacceptable to me, unacceptable.
Well, remember when Virginia couple, the Salihis, managed to slip into the state dinner at the White House? And this was a breakdown in security of major proportion. Do you think it's time to call in the fruit? Now, for those of you that may not know what I mean, the fruit of Islam, or the fruit as we call it, as they are so affectionately known as, for short, is a male-only paramilitary wing of the Nation of Islam. Now, is it time to call in the fruit?
May I can entertain you on that if you like and say, yeah, it's time to call in the fruit, because we know, you know, they'll have his back. I mean, I don't know. It's time to call in somebody. And these people better get it together, and they better get it together real quick, because I guarantee you this country could not recover, in my opinion, from anything happening to this president. Could not recover. America, as we know and proclaim to love, would not recover from, not in my lifetime, from if something was to happen to this president. So everybody, that's why I said everybody who was at work that night, who was supposed to be, where they everybody should be fired. I don't care where you was. You was not where you were supposed to be, so you need to be fired. Because that doesn't make sense how he was able to do all that. And then it took so long to catch him.
Right.
5 days went by before they found him? That's unacceptable.
You know, I'm not big on conspiracy theories or anything like that, but for the police to have talked to him or stopped him earlier that day, for him to be able to have the green light to do what he did and to have the audacity to do it and get away with it. And the if you look at the timeline of the events, you know, where he was stopped early that day, his weapons, and the fact that he drove down and he shot. And now remind you, all this occupied the nation is going on, so there had to be several people, you know, witnessing an event. So for him to get cleared, for him to get a route cleared for him to be able to do this. Now, I'm not saying that this would happen, but the perception is that he had a cleared route to be able to do this is questionable. And then response behind it again, and that's why I'm saying maybe we need to get the fruit involved. I mean, you know, we know that they will protect you. Now, granted, people can argue that, you know, the Malcolm X was assassinated with the fruit being around and things of that nature, but that was under some different circumstances as well. So I'm asking, you know, is it time to get the fruit involved, Jim? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if it's time to get them involved or not. I do know it's time for the president to take a look at who he has around him, and if he needs to make some major adjustments to ensure that the people that are protecting him have his, you know, back and his family's back, then he needs to do that. I'm just concerned that, as you just stated, the man had been stopped. He had been given clearance to kind of be wherever he was at. Nothing about that makes any sense to me. So
what's the deal with the media not covering this and giving it the attention that it deserves?
I'm not real sure. I'm very upset about that because
it is obvious that he didn't necessarily go in and confess, but there are a lot of video out there of him talking about him being Jesus. There's a lot of video out there saying that he thought President Obama was the Antichrist. I mean, there's a lot of footage, him begging Oprah to be on her show for this particular nonsense. So obviously there's enough meat, enough substance in this to report about it. And the fact that this is an attempt, even if the president wasn't there, he still has family there. I mean, they don't travel around. I mean, they don't travel around with him when he goes overseas all the time. I mean, unless he's on vacation. So, I mean, you got to worry about the kids, the mother-in-law, the wife. I mean, the staff. I mean, there are other people besides the president that we have to be concerned about as well. And I'm saying that the media has not covered this or gave it its due diligence as it deserves. And why is that?
I agree. Now, I don't know if it's because nobody wants to think about the possibility, if there was like, oh, it's not serious because he wasn't there, but that's so, whether he was there or not there, to me doesn't matter, because I remember the night it came flashing across my computer screen or the TV screen that, you know, just kind of like shots heard. This is what it originally said: shots heard outside of the White House. President is not there.
I remember you tweeting it. I mean, you reading it on Twitter, and you know, it was like a blurb,
like,
and that was
like,
it.
Like that was okay that some shots were heard by the White House, and the president is not there, so it's okay. No, and that's how it was originally reported, and it hasn't gained any other. excuse me, they haven't said any more about it since then.
Okay, so. Let me ask you this. At what point will we stop hiding behind the Second Amendment and take a serious look at our gun laws? Now, for those of you that may not be aware of what the Second Amendment states, it says that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. And so the Gabrielle Giffords incident should give us pause when we hear these similar type of activities conducted by other people, you know, and with the same mental state. So when are we going to stop hiding behind the Second Amendment right and get a handle on gun control?
And we can have the Second Amendment as long as we also have in place that those people that are getting those guns are mentally stable to have those guns. You know, so if we're not going to be invested to create some sort of system test, whatever, that one has to go through in order to own a weapon such as a gun, then we need to rethink the validity of such, you know, of everybody being able to bear arms if we're not going to be ensure that the people that that's mentally stable can have one.
Yeah,
so, I mean, and I know there'll be ways around it. Of course there are. I mean, there's ways around everything. Every law that we have, there's ways around it for sure. Drinking, underage drinking, is out of control on college campuses. So we know that somebody is not following the law as it relates to not giving, you know, underage, you know, teenagers alcohol. We know that. But those people should be held accountable when something happens with that child who was drinking. So just like somebody should be held accountable for that, if you a gun owner and you the one that sold a gun to this man who now goes out and kills 20 people, I think the gun owner needs to hold some accountability to that. Now, I know that's a stretch. People are not going to agree because then they're saying you need to hold the bartender for the drunk driver. Well, if you the bartender and you saw he was having one too many, you might have some culpability in that. So we've really got to take a look at making sure that these people that are buying guns, and then why do we need so many guns? What are we doing? Who are we killing? A lot of these weapons were used, you know, were said for farming and hunting and not for people.
Right.
But we're seeing these weapons being used on people, and I'm sure, I'm not trying to be a Michelle Bachman here, but I'm sure that's not what the founding fathers intended. I'm sure.
Well, what does it say about our system that it's easier to get a gun than it is easier to vote in the United States of America?
Yeah, it's easier to get a gun license than it is to get your voter ID. Now, that's a sin and a shame. It says that we, once again, we've lost our moral compass. We are just wandering around, to speak biblically, like the children of Israel, just wandering around, going from here and there. We have no clue, because if we did, we would know that that is so beneath who we proclaim to be as a country, as a nation. We are so not acting like the nation that is supposed to be better, that's supposed to be, as you like to call it, the superpower. We're so not acting like that. We're acting like we're at the bottom of the barrel as opposed to being the cream of the crop. And so, you know, when we allow your gun license to act as a reference for you to vote, but your college ID as a student will not. It has your picture, what school you're attending, but that will not allow you to vote, but your gun license will. It's unbelievable, unbelievable.
Now, I know you say a lot about our moral compass, but I keep wanting to shift the conversation back to money. It is obvious that the lobbyists on Capitol Hill is really influencing our politics, influencing our legislation. So, therefore, I know when you mention our moral compass that people need to be doing the right thing, but it seems to me that the money is preventing them from making that decision because they're so greedy, I'm going to say, is that they rather be paid than to have any kind of ethics or morals.
Yeah, because for some reason we've equated money with making us happy. And money if I'm not happy, I'm closer to being happy than unhappy. And so we'll do anything for the next dollar. And if that means selling my soul to the lobbyists, then I'll sell my soul to the lobbyists, but at least my child can go to private school. I mean, you know, that's really kind of how it comes down. I can live in this, you know, mansion of a home and go to the finer places and the resorts of the world. If that means, you know, so what, you know, the little kids down the street don't have any food or their education system is being derailed. That's not my bother. And so it is. It's all about money. And you look at the institutions of our colleges, and we're talking about the stuff with the sports. Blinds eye because of the amount of money that the
Absolutely.
Athletic program
Absolutely.
Generates. We're talking millions of dollars. I mean, millions on top of millions on top of millions of dollars we're talking here. And it funds the whole school. So everybody, every other athletic program, scholarships, you know, different things, you know, it's all attached to that money that's coming from the athletic department. So that gives it a whole lot of power, you know. And so therein, in my opinion, is where, you know, the problem is that we have allowed access to money, what it could do for me. We have allowed it to cloud our judgment, and we're suffering for it. You know, I might not suffer for it right now, me personally, but my neighbor is probably suffering for it right now.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned the colleges and universities and the fact of suffering. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on UC Davis campus. Now, on Friday, a group of University of California Davis students, part of the Occupy Wall Street movement on campus, became the latest victims of alleged police brutality to be captured on video. Now, I don't know if you've seen the video. I'm sure you have because you blog about this type of stuff all the time. It showed them spraying this mist of a pepper spray on these students that were clearly not behaving inappropriately. What has our nation become when we can do that to our college students?
Well, when did it become illegal to organize and to peacefully assemble? I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. When did that become illegal? When did that become a problem? Because who we are as a country is founded on peacefully assembling. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so when did that become a bad thing that we have, you know, wanted to criminalize people who want to stand up for what they believe in, and then to have the people not be a threat? That's what I'm having a problem with. These people who were pepper sprayed, these students at UC Davis, they were not being a threat at the time in which this officer pepper sprayed them. They were sitting on their hands. So they couldn't even make believe that something was getting ready to happen. And then it was all caught on tape. I just don't understand, in the age that we live in, what makes people think they can still do some of the stuff that they do and not get caught?
You know, what's sickening to me is the fact that he kind of paraded the canisters around and said, look what I'm about to do. I'm about to spray these students with this. And he kind of showed it off before he actually did it. And then he kind of sit there and just did, you know, so casually, you know, leisurely kind of sprayed it in their eyes. And then there's a report out of, it was called BoingBoing.com. It's a blog that was written out there that talked about how this student was put in the car after this mist was on his face. And he could not, you know, he was hands was tied behind his back, one, and he kept asking for some assistance to get the water, and the police did nothing. So I know we kind of are quick to look, point the fingers at the police, but who gave the order to do this? Was it the chancellor, Linda Cartagena?
I'm not sure. And therein is the other problem, in that even if that person was given some sort of direct order, I'm pretty sure there still has to be some sense of order in giving that type of order. And under normal circumstances, people are only pepper sprayed as a last resort, as you're trying to regain control. And it appears that these students were already under control. So there would have been no reason to do that, none whatsoever. And therein is why it doesn't make any sense and why there's such an outrage, because they wasn't doing anything. Now, I can understand if this was a group and they were throwing trash cans at the officers and, you know, they were unruly or whatever, and they were trying to regain some control. But to spray it directly into their face while they're sitting down on the ground, no less, with their hands underneath them, and you walk up and down the line, that is an abuse of power. And
what
that
about the
officer, once the investigation is complete, he should be fired.
Well, what about the argument that they were given an order to remove themselves from the premises? So let's say, for example, you have the same instance of people trespassing on someone's lawn, and they just want to just sit there. And then the police come, and they say, hey, you got to move, because you're breaking the law, you're trespassing. But they refuse to do so. They're not doing anything. They're not causing any kind of behavior. They just refuse to move themselves. So what does the police do in that particular case? I mean, they have to restore order.
They were already in order. So then you go behind each and last one of them, and you get those little paper or those plastic handcuffs, and you handcuff them together, and you put them on the paddy wagon. That's what you do. They were seated. They were not a threat. They were not an immediate threat. They just refused to move. They go to the defense course on what to do with people that refuse to move.
Yes.
You move them. You don't pepper spray them, especially if they're not acting out in a violent manner. So there was another way to go to remove those people from that spot if it was all about where they were seated. You put those paper, those plastic handcuffs on them, and you march them and you load them up.
So when are we as American people going to wake up and say that this Occupy movement is the real deal? When are we going to say that we need to listen to the people that are out there, listen to those out there, and stop treating them like they're inhuman?
When the majority of media stops trying to marginalize who these people are and what they represent. Or criminalize them, exactly. When you sit and you watch television as much as I do, or I'm on the internet a lot, and I hear what they're saying, what the reporters are saying, they have made these people out to be poor. They've made them out to be uneducated. They've made them out to be bad people that are just out trying to get a free ride. They put all these labels on it. And majority of them don't even fit that. You know, that's the problem. The majority of them don't even fit the labels that they've given them. And so you're dealing with a group of people that are highly educated, that know exactly what they're doing, that have the means to be sitting out there. You know, it's not as though they're just sitting there and they don't have the means to be there. You've got to know that these people are out here for a purpose and for a reason. And so when the media begins to treat them as give them the same amount of energy and attention that they gave Egypt, that they gave Cairo, that they gave in Libya, we were saturated with the images over there, saturated with the people and their signs. I want the same, because this thing has spread from coast to coast. I said this a couple weeks ago. It has spread from north to south, east to west, and all points in the middle. There's an Occupy movement. And if we fail to acknowledge it, what's going to happen is then the movement itself will up the ante. We don't have to worry about what the police officers or law enforcement is going to do. The movement itself will begin to say, okay, now it's time for Plan B. We got your attention. Now we're going to give you our list of demands. And I think that's where we're headed. I believe that's where we should be headed. We're going to go into a serious situation here in our economy with these, and I know you're going to talk about this in a minute, leading up with this Congress. We've got to be, you know, this movement is going to take us right to where we need to go.
You know, the other thing I want to mention, too, about this particular instance is that this is somewhat akin to what happened years ago when the water hoses were on the African-Americans in the Civil Rights Movement. You know, people heard buzz of the movement. They were able to see pockets of coverage on what was going on. They heard rumors of all of the actual atrocities happening to African-Americans down in the South. But when it became publicized across the nation, when it became national news, when they saw how the children and men and women were being mistreated, it actually caused an uprise across the world, across the nation, and it got the support of people across the world. So as you see these pockets of incidents that are happening with police, allegedly police brutality, come up in Denver, come up in Dallas, come up in UC Davis, I think you're going to start to see the people as a whole begin to move into to take a, this whole movement take a turn. and it could be a turn for the worse, because if the people, you know, keep saying enough is enough, then they're going to start striking back. And we already talked about this issue of guns and guns control. When people start to fight fire with fire, it could be an ugly situation in our nation. I mean, really ugly.
Yes, I agree with that. And I hope that, you know, the saying is, if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. And so I hope that it doesn't take the level of violence that was given towards our people back in the day. And I hope it doesn't get to a point where, you know, we're dealing with death and destruction and lives are being taken away from us, because the dollar is the color of the of our currency is the only color that's gonna matter, but that is mattering at this time. And so when you have a group that says they are willing to put up $850,000 to silence this movement, that's telling you that the movement has gotten their attention. And so if $850,000 they're willing to pay to discredit the movement, to put ads out about it, to try to shake people from being supportive, then that means it is doing what it set out to do. And it is causing the people that have that $850,000 to begin to be a little bit nervous about how they're going to hold on to that $850,000. It's all about money, and it's all about keeping it. It's not about giving it away. And that you have a group now that, you know, as I stated, their goal is to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find it odd that and it's just interesting to me how they go in the middle of the night and do these police raids.
Yeah.
While people are sleeping at one.
I mean, those are military tactics. That's a military tactics. I mean, whenever you're doing that, you're definitely using military tactics to silence your enemy, basically.
Yeah, and I just find that to be appalling in itself. So.
You know, what's different from the movement I mentioned earlier about the civil rights movement is that the major theme running through everything that was happening was peace. The major theme that was running through Martin Luther King and the conversation and the rhetoric was nonviolence. That is not the theme running through this particular component. And so, although again, I talk about the fact that there are a lot of instances of what we call police brutality, or allegedly police brutality, that are in pockets of the nation, and in Denver and in Dallas and in UC Davis most recently, is that you will find that these people are a different generation. They handle things differently. So although, you know, the 60s, you know, people were truly about nonviolence, I can't say that about this particular generation. So, you know, it's going to be very hard to predict what happens going forward when they continue to be put in these positions when they're obviously not doing anything, any harm. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in the days and weeks to come. We're going to shift gears here in a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about the super committee. All of this going on with the Congress, and it seems like there appears to be stuttering here a little bit. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. We're going to also open up the phone lines to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We'll be back in just a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and AskGMA can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, as I stated earlier, we have a we have a chat room open. You can chat with us. You can also tweet us at on Twitter at TaylorMade101, or you can also contact Jima at AskJima. And that's AskJema. And Jima, I just got this is just in. Now, of course, we're avid tweeters, and we always on Twitter. And right now, I saw that there was First Lady Michelle Obama was booed at NASCAR. What is going on with that?
What? I haven't seen that. What happened?
Yeah. So go out there on Twitter. Roland Martin was just tweeted that watched that the First Lady Michelle Obama was booed at the NASCAR race. And the reason why I asked that question is because, I mean, what is going on with our society when you just blatantly disrespect the president and the first lady? I mean, time and time again, there was a picture that was illustrated that showing President Obama kissing a foreign leader that was pulled ultimately, but to be able to continue to disrespect the president like this, unacceptable. What is going on in our society?
Well, we refuse to admit that this has nothing to do with his policy. And Michelle Obama is not the president. She is his wife. It has everything to do with the fact that they are looking at two people of color who is in the most highest office of the land, and everybody wants to be president, and this man is it, and they cannot handle it. It has nothing to do with his policy, zero. Because now that my memory is jogged, you have the same NASCAR people that refused to go to the White House a little while back, about a month ago. Some of these well-known NASCAR drivers refused to go to the White House, and yet NASCAR says you're wanting to invite and be more diverse. No, you don't. Because if you did, then those people would have been fined for being disrespectful. And so the decision they made in terms of why they didn't want to go to the White House. And then for this to happen with Michelle, I just find it, as you stated, I have never seen so much disrespect of the president, the office, or his family in my entire life. And so there's no way you can tell me it's not about race. I'm going to call it what it is. It's not about the fact he's a black man. Whatever part of him that's black, that's who they see. And you cannot tell me it's not because of who she is, a strong, forward-thinking, independent black woman who, as I can recognize because I see her, I see me in Michelle.
Mm-hmm,
people
mm-hmm.
cannot handle that, especially men, and especially men that don't look like Michelle. They have a hard time dealing with the first lady. And so it is and then nobody wants to report on it because they don't want to make it be about race. But if we never call it what it is, we will never fix the problem. We will never fix the problem if we fail to put a name on this thing. And that's not to say that those people are racist. I'm saying it is because he is a black man with a black family in the White House is the reason why people think they can say whatever they want to say, draw whatever pictures they want to draw, and treat them less than.
You know, you're talking about
that's,
the picture.
That's all
now.
It's about. It's not about anything else. It's
right.
about him being black, period.
Now, the United Colors of Benetton revealed digitally manipulated images of world leaders kissing as a part of the company's new unhate campaign. The shocking new campaign features the modified images of U.S. President Barack Obama locking lips with Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. And I just don't understand how we continue to. I mean, even it started with the whole "you lie" comment. You know, at when the president
that
made
was
his address.
The beginning. You're right, and it has gone downhill ever since then.
And people continue to take that approach, and I have to agree with you on a lot of different levels. The fact that when you look at the fact that our society is so desensitized when it comes to the degradation of African American, especially men. But I just can't say it's just white men. I have to say, and I have to go on record to say, that when you listen to rap music, it perpetuates it. I mean, can you imagine any other race being mentioned in a derogatory manner in the way it does for African Americans be tolerated and be sold and make millions of dollars off of? There's no way. If you listen to any rap song and you substitute the word with cracker, you substitute the word with Jew, spick, anything, any derogatory name, if you substitute those words in where you hear the word nigger, then I guarantee it will be an uproar. An outcry on those issues, but yet and still we go on record and make this thing and we do it over and over and over, and yet and still when somebody else does it, then we want to get mad. But we do it to ourselves and we tolerate it. I don't understand it.
Right. I don't understand it either. I've never understood it. I've never been one to applaud that type of behavior, those types of lyrics. Even before it wasn't cool, I wasn't a big proponent of that word. And so it bothers me that we are the only race. And so it bothers me, but then it also tells me that we are the race that's most feared. Because if we're the most, we have to be the most feared because we're the ones they want to keep down the most. So that means that there's a part of them that believes that if we let them rise to the top, to the highest level, they will really take us out. And so we have got to keep them underneath something. And so let's feed them this and let's feed them that. Let's give them some false sense of ownership to stuff because we don't own nothing. You know, a lot of it, when a lot of the music first came out, you know, back in the day, those guys would die broke. They didn't have access to their royalties or none of that stuff. And yet we've been making record companies millions of dollars for years. It didn't just start with hip-hop. Record companies been making money off of black folks singing for years. And those same entertainers would die broke.
Mm-hmm.
And would need somebody to help to bury them. So, you know, it's been going on since the beginning. And somewhere, whoever, as you like to put it, whoever that person was that was in charge of marketing and that was in charge of branding has done an awesome job in convincing a race of people that, you know, you're okay where you are. Don't aspire to be too much. And that's why it's difficult for them to really accept the president. Because if too many people begin to say, well, wait a minute now. So that's why they want to marginalize his success. Oh, he's not really black. Oh, he hadn't had the struggle. You got Rick Perry saying, you know, that this president doesn't know what it means to struggle. So he can't really understand the plight of American people. And you can, Rick Perry?
Ludicrous.
Really?
That was just straight ludicrous. Mm-hmm.
Right, you know. And so so they've done all these things to try to delegitimize him and make him not be one of us, and he's an other than. That because they know if people begin to really buy, and not just black people, but anybody who's ever felt like the foot has been on your neck, and you begin to see, I can move your foot. I really can. I have the strength and the power to move your foot. If I truly believe that, I'm going to do everything I can to move that foot. But if I don't believe that, if I believe I was born and that foot, I was born for that foot to be on my neck, then I'm going to let that foot stay there.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's shift to the super committee for a second. Now, Politico is reporting that the Congressional Super Committee appears to be sputtering to a close with no deal in sight after more than 2 months of high-stake negotiations, as the two sides are considering options to bring the panel's work to an end. Lawmakers on the 12-member committee continued to negotiate on Saturday by high-level talks between House Speaker John Boehner, of course, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, aimed at salvaging a scaled-back deal, have hit a dead end. Senate Minority Whip John Kyle, one of the 12 negotiators, emerged from his office suite after a GOP conference call Saturday morning, saying Republicans were looking at altering the $640 billion package that Boehner's staff proposed to Reid on Friday. Sources said Reid, too, was working on a smaller package of deficit savings in the $550 billion range, but it's unclear whether the proposal has enough support to move forward. Now, Jimmy, if you have a super committee, well, that if you have the congressman that couldn't get the deal done, how is it possible that 12 people of the same body of people can get the job done? What's different?
Well, they're not, and we all knew this when they came up with this 12 committee. I don't know why we're acting like they have amnesia. When they decided that they were going to put this on the backs of 12 people, we knew already that 12 people wasn't going to be able to do it. A, we looked at the 12 people they selected. You got one woman on there, and you have one black person on there. That was it. Everybody else is the same group of white men that run everything or attempt to run everything. So, no, you wasn't going to get anything else out of that group than what we've already gotten, which is nothing, which is high unemployment, lower wages, no insurance, higher Medicare premiums for our elders, our seniors, all of that. That's what they've given us. They've given us a lot. They haven't given us anything we can use, but they've given us a lot.
You know, I don't understand how Congress can put the country in this type of bind, and they know so many people are hurting in so many different ways. There are no jobs or very few jobs. The benefits are shrinking. The education system is diminishing. The public jobs are being lost for firefighters, policemen, educators. I mean, and they allow this to happen as if, you know, the goal of the White House is more important than the people at large.
Here's the problem, though. We were losing more jobs under President Bush, and there was no outcry from these same Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
Most of them were there.
Yeah.
So, you know, why would I expect them to do anything different when this president has actually stopped the bleeding in terms of addressing what's causing the bleeding? We were losing more jobs under Bush than we've lost under this president. It's unbelievable. And so when you talk about the fact that they have made all of these statements, everything comes back to the fact. So now we're not only talking about the crazy man that got past security, got past whatever barricades, and can shoot at the White House. We're not talking about the total disrespect from Representative Wilson when he yells in the chambers, "You lie." Now you're talking about an entire Congress, the majority of Congress, whose ultimate goal is where they don't see that to bring down the president is bringing down America. They think they can do one and it has no impact on the other. That's how jaded their thinking is. And that's because their thinking is not being guided by common sense and logic like we think. It's being guided by how much money they're going to make.
And not to mention they don't understand the connectedness that we have across the world. So it's no longer the United States is this superpower that, such that it has, you know, the best educated, the most money and all these things are a fallacy now. And so when you're talking about destroying the America as we know it today, then you're talking about taking down the whole United States in a global context, not in a United States context, or not in a national context. And that's why I have to really give the president a lot of credit for continuing to reach out to those other countries in the nation, while he goes out there and build that relationship. You know, talking about all of the great things and trying to open up our borders to trade and things of that nature. Whether he's small, a simple-minded congressman, or just looking at things from an internal view, and it's very obvious through these recent GOP candidates, right? Very few of them understand anything about foreign policy.
They don't have a clue about foreign policy, and yet, in fact, we sit and China owns the majority of our debt. China is coming into the United States, buying up all sorts of property in cities such as Detroit, Cleveland areas, hotels that they're buying, major city property that they're buying from the city and from states and whatnot. So they're owning property. Not only do they own our debt, but now they're buying up property, you know, in major cities across the country, and we're not paying attention, and we're not asking why you want all this property, China.
Totally sleep at the
wheel.
Absolutely. Totally sleep at the wheel.
We're not asking that question because we're too busy wanting to talk about why the president said America was lazy. Well, he didn't say Americans was lazy. He said businesses, as a nation, we've gotten lazy in terms of letting people know who we are. We just kind of think, oh, we done made it, let's just sit back and chill. We don't have time to sit back and chill. And that's what he was talking about. But we want to spend time talking about that. But we don't want to take a look at what's happening in major cities across the United States and what China is doing here. They're not doing it across the sea. It's what they're doing right here in our own backyard. You want to talk about it? Showtime used to have a show called Sleeper Cell that was related to terrorism stuff. Well, I'm going to put a whole other spin
on it.
Yes, it was. One of my favorite shows was I think his name was Michael Ealy. But I'm going to put a whole other spin on Sleeper Cell and say that with China coming up and buying up all this stuff, we better be paying attention. Because there's a reason why they're coming up here buying everything they can find. There's a reason for it.
And that just shows you the superficial nature of our society nowadays. I mean, I saw a picture on Facebook where a guy was saying that, look at the president, he didn't have his hand over his heart when the national anthem was played, or something along those lines. So, I mean, the superficial nature of that picture and the comment on that picture shows me that it's very seldom that people understand the bigger picture.
Right.
You know, you just mentioned about the comment being made about people being lazy. Again, another instance where people don't understand the bigger picture. So to get caught up on this superficial, unimportant nature of these photo ops and these sound bites, where they forget the important nature of what's going on a larger scope, i.e., our education system is falling apart. Our economic system is falling apart, and the fact that we have no jobs. We have nothing for people to do. And so, therefore, they're going to result into doing all these crazy things that they're doing right now, which is making these stupid comments.
And what it does, and see, this is you know, I look at it as another get your hand out of my pocket, another distraction. It's a distraction from
what we really
need to be talking about. It's a distraction when we fail and those people in the media fail to call it what it is, it becomes a distraction. When you get these Republican candidates who want to be president oh so bad on TV making asinine statements, they need to be called out on them statements. When you get Congress up there making these, you know, promises about what they're not going to do, signing pledges about not raising taxes when we know raising taxes would generate some revenue, which would take us out of the hole we in, and they refuse to do it because of some pledge they signed. To me, that's criminal. I want to know how we can file charges against them.
Absolutely.
You know, somebody need to be investigating that because they are doing a detriment to the America that we say we know and love. Somebody needs to look at that.
And the guys
are they acting in the best interest of America, not in their own best interest, but are they acting the best interest of America when they draw those lines in the sand and refuse to move and they know it could help out the country? We're talking about helping out the president, and that's what they want to equate any kind of move they make as to whether it's a move that's going to help the president or hurt the president. That's all they're talking about. They're not talking about helping America get back to work. They're talking about keeping unemployment high so the president can't run on that during the election. That's all they're talking about. And what they fail to realize is that this president is moving forward because he has a plan that's bigger than they can ever even comprehend.
You know, I like his strategy.
And while they're over here on this little small stuff, he's on to something else.
You know, I like his strategy, the fact that he moved himself from out of Washington and started moving globally and across the nation. You know, selling his point, talking about the jobs, but he's not moved off that particular point for the last several months. And yet the Republicans refuse to provide the president any support. And then I'm not just going to say the Republicans, but some Democrats, too, which is crazy.
Yeah, some Democrats, too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't understand how in the world your own party is going to be against you when you're trying to get the legislation passed for your own constituents, on your own base. And again, so it's not just the Republican Party, but there are some Democrats that are doing the same exact thing. And when, you know, and this is the first time, you know, in my lifetime that we've actually had a president for the people. You know, although there's a lot of money in politics nowadays, there's a lot of people greasing these congressmen pockets. But I can say, because of the president's position to get his money from the people, he has not been put in a position where he has to listen to those big purses. You know, so and so he's actually free to make the decisions that he makes because he's not tied to a pledge, if you will.
Right.
And so it's really to his advantage for him to be out moving around and doing all those wonderful things that he is doing. So as we close this segment right here, I want to ask one question about the super committee. Will they close the deal before Thanksgiving?
No. They have until tomorrow, really, to make it happen. And I don't see them doing it. And, you know, to back up for a minute, you were saying you were glad that the president has gotten out of Washington and is out doing things going across the country and across the world, really. I agree with that. And yet and still, and it's so funny, boy, I tell you, you know, it was just this week they were saying the president needs to be in Washington providing leadership to the super committee. Well, the last time he's intervened and tried to provide leadership, it blew up in his face. So why would he attempt to go back into a hostile environment and provide them, quote-unquote, some leadership when they think they have the answers already? So I don't blame them. I wouldn't be up there either. I mean, y'all want it. This is what you all said y'all would do and how we would fix the problem, because this problem could have been fixed had they not wanted to put the debt ceiling on to it. This is how the budget and doing some other things didn't have anything to do with the debt ceiling. But since y'all want to attack it all together, now figure it out. I don't blame them. Figure it out.
You know, there's a couple of things that really irks me is the fact that they talk about all of these things that work, all of the things they could have done or should be doing, but they're in Congress. They can write the legislation to do it.
Right.
There's no need to have a committee to do these things. You get together, you do your job, period. And so for them to keep saying that what the president is not doing, it's not his job to do that. And so I don't understand how they continue, or the American people continue to allow them to do the 48 fake, or to kind of do the bait and switch on them. You know, by asking the president to come back and participate in this ludicrosity, he's not going to do it because he already did that. He spent several weeks, in fact, he spent 3 years working with them, trying to compromise, trying to get them to get their writing this legislation himself. Now, CEOs Presidents don't do that type of work, but they asked him to do it, and he put it together, and what? They voted it down. And so he's smart enough to know that there's nothing they're going to do. So him being there is a waste of his time. And he's using his time more wisely today than he has in the last 3 years, because he's not standing for it, and he's going to use the power to veto if they come down with some craziness. And what's interesting is that the provision in the super committee, if they don't reach a deal, is the fact there are going to be some major defense cuts. And what the Republicans are going to try to do, or what the spin will be, is the fact that the president's fault that the soldiers are not getting paid. It's going to be the president's fault is that nothing in defense is going to happen. So they're going to try to pin this on the president, because if he vetoes a provision to give the super committee some more leeway or more time, or to have some provision in there so it won't cut to defense, then they're going to try to point the finger at him.
Of course, and that's what they want. But hopefully the American people is kind of game to what the Congress is attempting to do, and that we see, you know, we've been, you know, on the front row of this theater for at least the last 18 months. And so if we just go back a year to when they won the midterm elections and all that they claimed they were coming in to do, and here we are a year later with the same or higher numbers in unemployment, we still don't have a budget, we still don't have any idea on how we're going to attack the deficit to make it be a shared sacrifice across the board, and yet that's what they ran on. If I owned a TV station, I would just run in everybody's home district. The people that just got reelected, just got elected, I would just run their old commercials and just have them ad nauseum. This is what they said they were going to do, and they haven't done it. You know, if I was a Democratic National Committee, I would put the money out there to go find every last one of those ads, from John Boehner to everybody that ran to all these Tea Party people, and make them hear and eat their own words and let the people. Because if you take a look at it, you look at what's happening in Ohio and you look at what's happening in Wisconsin, the people are already, as they say, having buyer's remorse, because they realize this is not what you said you was going to do. I don't remember you saying you was going to try to get rid of collective bargaining and all of this. And so they're already taking some major steps in both of those states to take a stand and say, we're not in agreement with all of this. And so if that begins to catch on across the country, in other places where other, I mean, right now they're even trying to get ready to look at trying to recall Scott Walker out of Wisconsin. And if that happens, you know, that's going to set precedent around the country as to what you do when you're ready to organize. And that was the beginning of the movement, of this Occupy movement. When those senators from Wisconsin said, we're leaving. That was a stand, and they took it, and they got the attention that they needed to get, and they were able to stay away as long as they possibly could. And it's because of that they've got those recalls done. They won two more seats back. They in 2 days they gathered 50,000 signatures to recall Scott Walker, and the average was only supposed to be 9,000 a day. And in 2 days they had 50,000 signatures. These people are serious.
Oh yeah,
they're serious.
Yes,
and so
yes,
that's the model, you know. So Congress in D.C. better watch out. No, they will not meet anything. And the triggers, as they call, will be pulled, and let the chips fall where they may at that point.
That's right. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about Cornel West. That's right, people. He's leaving Princeton. Wait till you hear where he's going. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club, or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website, at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So I want to move for a moment to Cornel West. Now, a lot of people are saying that Cornel West is leaving Princeton for a lot of different reasons. I'm going to tell you what the root says here. The Root says that the New York Times is reporting that Princeton professor Cornel West is leaving his post in the summer to return to the Union Theological Seminary in New York City, where he started out as an assistant professor in 1977. The author of 19 books tells the Times that he will teach philosophy and Christian practices at Union and will take a significant reduction in pay. I don't have that much time, and I want to be able to do precisely what I'm called to do. I'm not real sure what he meant by that, but he said again, I don't have that much time, and I want to be able to do precisely what I'm called to do. Dr. West, 58, said, it would also be nice, he said, to be within walking distance of the Apollo Theater. Interesting. Unlike his departure from Harvard in 2002 after a dispute from the then President Lawrence H. Summers, Dr. West's departure from Princeton is on, quote unquote, good terms. Interesting. He will remain an emeritus professor there. Now, Princeton's president, Shirley Tilghman, said that Dr. West had helped create one of the world's leading centers for African-American studies at Princeton. Perhaps the move will give him more freedom to continue his evolution into social activism. He was surely moved in that direction recently with his ardent opposition to corporate America and his critiques of the Obama administration. We wish him luck and look forward to seeing what's in store for the next chapter of his career. Now, obviously, there's some buzz going around about why Cornel West is leaving Princeton, but I want Jima to weigh in on this one. Jima, why is Cornel West leaving Princeton?
Well, I have to take him at his word. I do think this time and season has caused a shift in his core in terms of what it was he wants to be remembered for. I think he mentioned in that article, or maybe it was another one, where he said he's getting older now, and I think he's had some time to reflect. I think the movement down there when he got arrested kind of shook something in him that he tried to intellectualize away. I guess that's the way I can put that. And so even if you go back to his guest appearance on the Bill Maher show, when he was very emphatic about what he'll go to jail for and what he'll die for, you know, you don't really hear that from those in the ivory tower so much. So I think something shifted in him where he wants to be seen and believed to be a true activist and not one that talks about activism, because if you activism is not what you talk about, it's what you do, it's who you are, it's a part of who you are. And so, you know, I think the critique of Dr. West has been the fact that he does a lot of talking from an intelligentsia standpoint about what the movement should be and how we should care for the least of these, and we, you know, out on the poverty tour. And so I've even questioned, well, while you were on the poverty tour, what did you do to help those in poverty? You know, was there a job seminar? You know, so I think he wants to move from the intellectual theory side of activism and into the practice side of activism. And so I think this move will free him up to do that, where he doesn't have to worry so much about the institution's reputation or whether or not the institution would get any backlash because their professor, Dr. West, has been arrested. You know, it kind of gives...
Interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
You know?
Now, so I wanted to mention, do you think he was leaving because he went to jail? This is another brother with a criminal record now.
No, I don't, because they dropped the charges. So I don't think that was it. But you know, you don't. The institution may have been like, look, now we love you, Dr. West, but you can't be out there going to jail. I know they dropped the charges, but you know, your name is still associated with Princeton.
And
let's not act like everybody from Princeton is all down with what Dr. West is doing.
And that's my point. And not just what he's doing, but what he's saying, too. I mean, come
right,
on. I mean, this,
right.
He says it's borderline. I'm going to say it like that. It's borderline crazy for him to say some of the things and do some of the things he's doing. And he's supposed to be a man from the ivory towers, as you call it. And so how could you continue to behave in this fashion? So I'm sure, I'm almost positive that this was a joint decision, not a individual decision.
Well, and the beauty of who he is, it allowed, the fact that he had some place to land was great. The fact that this university that he's going to is available, and they already know what they're getting. It seems as though this particular, I think the dean you spoke of, is embracing the fact that he doesn't have to worry about who he's going to be today. He can just come in and be Cornell, and we know who that is. He doesn't have to have a Cornell down on Occupy Movement hat and a Cornell Dr. West Princeton, of African Studies hat. You know, he can just be who he is. And maybe he'll be a lot more free to, I mean, his books over the years have covered some amazing topics, race matters and democracy matters. I mean, he's covered some heavy topics. So I think now he's ready to take it from, as I stated, a theoretical standpoint to a more practical standpoint. And
you know,
I applaud him for it.
You know, I often talk about those two opposing views, in my opinion, sometimes, theory and practice, because a lot of times people can stand up in the classroom and talk about theory all day and how things are supposed to happen. But until they put boots on the ground, they'll find very quickly that the things that they learned about are going to be a lot different than the things that are actually happening on the ground. So I put that in the context of what I do and what I've been doing for so many years when it comes to computer science, is the fact that I've actually been involved in a lot of development projects where we actually deliver to a customer, and to a major customer at that. And so when I go out and I talk about these theoretical components, it's really from a practical standpoint, not just from a theoretical standpoint. I can talk about both. And for example, Agile Scrum, you know, I've actually done it. I'm certified in it now, so I can go out and teach it. And so I have that practical standpoint as well as theoretical. But when it comes to the reverse, I don't know how true that is. So I believe, and it's my opinion, that over the next several months, he's going to understand that practice is a whole lot different than theory if you come from theory first. And so I understand where he's trying to go with the fact that, yes, he wrote about race matters. Yes, he, and because he's black, he can understand it from a little bit. But he's truly been in those ivory towers for a long time. The world is a lot different now than it was in 1960. The world is a lot different than it was in 1980. The world is a lot different than it was in just in 2000. And so for him to take the position of moving from Princeton down to this different school, for and notice he still didn't pick a HBCU, but for him to go with his calling, I think he's going to be in for a rude awakening, especially if he's trying to hang with yours truly, Al Sharpton.
Well, I don't think he's going to cross over all the way over into that lane because Reverend Al was top best and that was Jesse, and so when there's a direct there from those that got the lesson, King down through Jesse down through Reverend Al, and now there's a protege there coming as well. But I think but there's room for many room there, as we Scripture says. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are free. There's room for some more people to be active and to take up a cause from the beginning to the end and fight to the bitter end and hold to their convictions. There's room for more. We welcome Dr. West over side, and I agree with you. Going to practice might be a little difficult. I think, the hurdle, I think the biggest hurdle he had to cross was the day he got arrested, and the time spent talking to those people, dude, you in jail too. They didn't arrest you because you was Dr. Cornell West, but they have arrested you because you was Dr. Cornell West. So now what are you going to do? And so I think that may have given him a little bit, dose of that practical and that reality that he's needed. He's always had a good word to say. But, we always questioned his motive and, why are you not down all the way? It's like he would be down to a certain point and then you see him no more, So it's kind of like, are you all the way in, Dr. West, or are you more concerned about your position than you are concerned about the people? And although he talked about how he loved black people and da-da-da-da-da and poor people, but where are you when we really need you? And this will give him the peace he needs to say, I'm with you guys. I'm here. I'm on the same team with you all.
I was reading an article, I was wondering why did he mention the fact that he was taking a pay cut. I remember when I went from engineering and I took a sabbatical from engineering for a year and I taught high school, and then I noticed that I took a significant pay cut as well. But that wasn't the reason that I took the I didn't tout the fact that I took a significant pay cut. It was very obvious that when you go from an engineering position to a teaching position that the pay would be different. But the fact that I took a sabbatical from engineering and the fact that I was able to embed myself into the system, and in fact the system that I grew up in to teach high school for an entire year, it was just so gratifying and rewarding to me. And so I wonder if Dr. West's motives will be the same, to really get down there and really be trying to affect change, positive change, in a lot of different ways. I question the fact that he's going to the seminary school to do that, but the fact that he's, saying he wanted to be near the Apollo Theater, to me, implies that he's trying to get back to his roots, maybe one step at a time. And so I'm curious to what's going to be happening over several weeks and months to come. And I'm sure we'll hear more about this. So, Jamie, where is Tavis on this issue? Have you heard from him?
Well, I've not heard from Tavis. I think I saw something come across Twitter a couple of days ago that said, congratulations, Dr. West's move or something along those lines. So, which is interesting because Tavis hasn't been occupied Wall Street or occupied nobody's street.
Yeah, he's been quiet over the last couple of months, too. I mean, we ain't heard nothing from Tavis. You know what I'm saying? What happened?
Well, maybe he's trying to figure out his next strategy. His whole poverty tour didn't, I don't know if it garnered him what he was looking for or what.
He's trying to come up with a new strategy. You have to be authentic. People can read through that craziness all the time. And so, and it's unfortunate that he had so much credibility several years ago.
Right.
So what's the benefit for Dr. West in this particular case?
Say that again.
What is this move, how does it benefit Dr. West or the people that he's going to be affecting?
That last part came in a little muffled.
So what's the benefit? Why is he doing this?
Well, I think, you know, as people grow and you see something that you want to be a part of, I think sees that he can actually change and be a part of the process. And he wants to be a part of the process. He doesn't want to just be someone on a periphery. He wants to be taken serious as an activist. So for him, it's just, you know, part of where it's not just about talking the talk, but it's also about walking the walk. And when you are a true person that's out to effect change in a community, the community sees you as that. You know, if that's who you are. Now, if that's not who you are, we don't expect to see you. But when you to be that, then we expect to see you in those places making that happen. So, you know, I think that's kind of where he's now. He's wanting to be a part of something himself. He wants to be on the right side of change. And so he's willing to give up. He's willing to take some hits, because I'm sure he'll take some hits. Because we're going to be questioning that. Why are you doing it now? What's his angle? He's going to get off that. And so, you know, I think we suspend judgment, give him the opportunity to prove us right, as opposed to proving us wrong. I want him to prove us right that he is really this for the right reason, and that is to be a part of the movement that we're in right now.
Well, I have to definitely agree with you on that. So I want to say before we end the show here about what we got coming up in the next couple of weeks. Actually, on December the 4th, I want to let our listening audience know that we're going to be conducting, it's in 2 weeks, in fact, what we call Male Abuse Awareness. Now, a couple of years ago, we actually had, last year, we had Petra Luna stop by, and she had a guest from Australia come in and talk about male abuse awareness. And I think it's a good time to be doing this because of the recent discoveries at Penn State and, of course, Syracuse. So we're going to be talking about that in the coming weeks. We also looks like we're going to have one of the local board people on the school board that's going to be running for school board be one of the guests on the show in a couple of weeks. So we invite you all to come out here and listen in to what's going on out there in both cases. And on December 4th, again, in our male abuse awareness, as we observe that particular component, we want to talk about a lot of things. And our guest is going to be from the Oprah Show. And so as we get more confirmation and as the day get closer, we're going to talk about who that is. We're going to talk about you know, why they're going to be on the show, and you'll get a chance to call in live and talk to that individual on December 4th. That's in 2 weeks coming up. And so, again, I would like to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there in radio land, I should call it. We've really been enjoying ourselves over the last year and a half or so, and we appreciate people coming out and listening to us every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. So that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. It is always a pleasure to have you join us. Again, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. I invite you to come out and view our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. There you'll find all the latest and greatest commentary on all the current events happening around the world. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer and Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.